What's going on, people? Welcome to Pain Points, a Tainus Hoopers podcast, proudly brought to you by the SB Nation Network. As usual, I'm Jake Painting. You can find me at Jake Painting, JakePaynting, on Twitter. And you can find my written work and a bunch of other written work over at TainusHoopers.com. Today, I am joined by Trip Wagner. He's recently started writing over at Dunking with Wolves. You've probably seen him on Twitter at Timberwolves News. He does a lot of good work over there, and he's just started his foray into writing, which is also very good and very informative stuff that he's already put out. So, yeah, how you doing, Trip?
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Yeah, good. How you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad at all.
Good.
Pretty much the same. So, today we're going to get straight into some optimistic predictions, I guess, some bold predictions. It's a pretty sour time at the moment in the world, so I thought we'd get into some fun, optimistic stuff. Trip, as you know, if you follow him on Twitter, is a pretty optimistic guy, which I love. And so I thought I'd get him on and we'd try and have some fun with it today. So if you want to just get straight into your first big call, your first big prediction, Trip, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, I just say first and foremost, someone's got to be optimistic here. Anytime I post something, it's followed up with about 100 negative responses saying that I'm very uninformed about basketball. So I'm getting thick skin over here as a Bulls fan. But yeah, I'll start it out. I think the biggest thing for me, you know, obviously the season didn't go the way we wanted after the deadline. Granted, these guys haven't had an offseason together. So my biggest thing, I think 5 seed is extremely, extremely doable, if not better. I think based off, you know, the way Malik Beasley, the way he was rolling, D-Lo, the way he was rolling, you know, Cat really hasn't played with him yet. I think with the way that this team is going, I think 5 seed is extremely attainable next year. Just based off, you know, what's ahead, I think Rosas has a couple picks up his alley that he's going to, you know, be able to use for some more assets. I think we're going to use that mid-level to most likely acquire quote unquote an asset that they'll probably move at the deadline. But I just think the 5 seed is extremely attainable. The defense is terrible, but that offense I think is easily going to be top 10 without question.
Yeah, I'd be pretty surprised if the offense wasn't top 10, if not, you know, at their peak, maybe get up to top 5. Mm-hmm. And I think I've wrote about this before that top 5, top 10 offenses often make the playoffs. It's pretty rare that, especially a top 5, it's very rare that a top 5 offense doesn't make the playoffs. But I think they definitely have the talent. I think Ryan Saunders with another year of coaching experience probably serves him really well. The one thing that I guess is the stumbling block there is just the West, obviously. Like, if they were in the East, yep, you could pretty much pencil them in for a top 6 seed almost every season with this roster. But they're going to have to get over, I think. So let's go through it, I guess. The Lakers, Clippers, Nuggets, Mavericks, Rockets, Jazz, and then Golden State will be back next year. That's 8 right there. So they're going to have to be better than at least 3 of those, and then that leaves teams like Memphis and Portland and New Orleans as well. I don't think that's out of the realms of possibility for them to be better than a few of those teams, but it's just a bloodbath out there in the West at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I don't even look at the, you know, the Lakers, the Clippers. I don't even, like, consider them. I don't even look at them for the Timberwolves right now. I think we're so far from where they are. I mean, I think we're going towards being where we want to be with that, but it would be unfair to even really consider them. I think, you know, the biggest thing I'm looking at is like a team like the Jazz. Are they going to be better? I don't think Rudy Gobert and you know, Donovan Mitchell are going to be teammates very long. They don't like each other. I think the as far as I'm concerned, the Blazers are a failed experiment. You have two of the most dynamic guards in the league and have not really produced very much in terms of the playoffs.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if they don't have the start that they want to see McCollum moved at the deadline and then really push for Anfernee Simons, who they drafted pretty high, to certainly kind of step into that role. So I think it's a lot more attainable. I look at a team like the Mavs and think, okay, you know, they made a move for Kristaps, we made a move for D'Lo, two prolific guys that just for whatever reason just wasn't working out where they were. Obviously, Warriors was, you know, more of an asset signing. Can't blame them for taking the max. And then I look at a guy like Kat and Doncic, similar type of setup. Two guys to really build a team around that are young, certainly not even in their prime yet, you know, in basketball terms. And I think it's real. I mean, I think, you know, you look at the supporting cast. I mean, Malik Beasley was firing on all cylinders, and I think, you know, that was a great addition. I don't know how, you know, I don't know if he'll be on the team long term or not, but I mean, he's going to be resigned for sure. And I think, you know, that's three really solid pieces to work with. And I think defense, like I said, is really not a good thing right now. But again, I mean, how many of these superstars are playing prolific defense at this point? So I like the Wolves really to be able to beat out those teams off the top of my head, like the Mavs and the Blazers. So,
yeah,
that's kind of where I'm at. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I think they definitely have a chance to beat out a few of them teams. Even, I guess, you know, someone like some of the teams on the outer, like your Memphis. I think Memphis will probably drop down a bit next season, especially as the West gets a bit tougher. New Orleans are one that I kind of waver on, I guess, because I feel like they're probably going to be pretty good next season just based on their, you know, last 20 games, and obviously we didn't get to see Zion for a full season, but they're still a huge question mark. I guess don't know what way they're going to go, and they're a bit like Minnesota where their defense is pretty much stunk and their offense kind of carries them. So I think Minnesota definitely have a chance to make the playoffs. I think it'll still require a really good offseason. I think, like you said, probably a free agent or a trade, and then really hitting a couple of home runs on draft night.
Yeah. I agree completely.
All right. So we're getting to... I also want to have... just do a little percentage at the end. So we'll just give what percentage we think that this actually can happen. So what do you...
Sure.
What do you think for that?
For the playoffs, I'd say I'm honestly 95% certain that they can at least be an 8 seed. I mean, there's no way... I see Cat and D'Lo as top 25. I really think D'Lo is a top 20. I think he's like a top 25 player. It's beside the point. But 5 seed, I'd say 50-50. I mean, it really just depends on what this offseason looks like for the Wolves. So I'd say 50-50 on that. I maybe even 51-49. I'm really confident in Gerson Rosas that this isn't the roster that's going into opening day or at the deadline. They're not going to get worse, and I think they will only get better. I really am high on that, so I'd say 51%.
Yeah, well, I'm not as optimistic as you guys have already discussed, but I had 50% for the playoffs, and I had 20% for the 5 seed, and even then I think I'm kind of pushing my own boundaries a little bit, just because I've had this pessimism just built into me over the years. But I do need your optimism to kind of, you know, lift my title a little bit. Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
I'm
with you, man.
So we get into my first call. So I went with Karl Anthony Towns to be second team All NBA. I think there's been constantly, you know, four centers over the last few seasons that have been All NBA candidates. Nikola Jokic, Joel Embiid, Rudy Gobert, and then Towns as well. I think it figures to be pretty similar next season, unless maybe a Bam Adebayo kind of takes another big leap forward. But even then, I'd wager that it's those four guys competing for the three spots again. I think with a few more wins, like we just discussed, and a full healthy season as the number one option and the best shooting big man on the planet, I think Towns could not only beat out Gobert, but maybe even snag a spot from Jokic or Embiid. I think maybe, especially with Embiid's health issues over the past few years, over his whole career, it doesn't take much mental gymnastics to kind of see him playing 55 games and Towns playing, you know, back up to closer to 82 and really, you know, having his best season ever, especially next to D'Angelo Russell. We've heard so much about how much they wanted to play together and how well they'll fit is pretty obvious offensively. I think the pick and roll, pick and pop, D'Angelo Russell already showed without Karl Anthony Towns in the lineup how well he can facilitate others. And I think obviously it'll probably require another step forward defensively for Towns, which I still do think he has in him. But I think, yeah, I really don't think it's out of the realms of possibility for Towns to snag that second team All NBA spot.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I could disagree, but I can't. I mean, I would argue that I think he got robbed a bit this year. I mean, he's just one of those guys where, for whatever reason, a lot of the national, you know, media, a lot of the fans across the country, you don't get to watch the Timberwolves, especially before D'Angelo Russell. I think that might shift a little bit now. Just whether they're good or not, they'll be fun to watch. So I think they'll be on TV more nationally. But he's a guy that, I mean, for better or worse, I mean, I've never seen someone so disrespected in terms of, oh, he can't play defense. He can't play defense. That's why. I mean, this is the most prolific offensive center and arguably of the past, maybe ever, in my opinion. And he's very young. And I think that it's tough when you're a center to get all NBA when you're not good at defense. That's the one position where you have to, you know, you look at a guy like Gobert. Offensively, I mean, he can't do much, right? I mean, outside of 8 feet or whatever the case may be. But he needs to improve on defense, but it's not fair to suggest that he needs to be this great defender to be all NBA, because a lot of superstars are not good at defense and no one talks about it. And it blows my mind because, yes, Cat is not good at defense. I'd argue that he's a willing defender. I think he'll improve. He's, you know, but offensively, you're not going to find a better talent. I mean, Embiid, sure, he's right up there with him, can't stay healthy. Fan favorite, that helps him out quite a bit. But I completely agree. I mean, I think he's one of the best. I mean, I think he's the best center in the league. And I agree. He will definitely, I think he will be all NBA. I mean, if not second team, first team, I mean, truly, I mean, if he can just play a lick of defense, I mean, he's just very, like I said, there's this national perception that he's soft from his Jimmy Butler days and from his defensive ability, but it's really not fair because a lot of top tier players in today's NBA do not play defense.
Yeah, I'm not even going to get really into the soft narrative because that's probably my most hated narrative around any player in the league. Obviously, I'm biased because Towns and he, you know, the best player from my favorite team, but I think not punching Jimmy Butler in the face in a practice doesn't make a man soft. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think, yeah. And I don't think he's, like you said, I don't think he's soft on defense. I think his defensive IQ is pretty low, and he's been put in situations with drop schemes and with you know, bad guard defenders in front of him, pick and rolls that don't help him at all. And I don't think he helps himself by kind of overthinking and maybe chasing blocks. But like you said, I think he's a willing defender for sure. I don't think he's lazy. I just think he's a bit his skill hasn't developed as well as one would like.
And I'll add a wrinkle to that is that, you know, it's really hard to be a plus defender when you don't have a ton of talent around you. I mean, Jimmy Butler was great when he was in Minnesota. He didn't have a ton of talent around him, but outside of his, you know, this is the first time. I mean, yeah, the Zach LaVine, Andrew Wiggins days were fun to dream about, but from a talent standpoint, it's really hard to play good defense when the guys around you aren't super talented. And I think, yeah, again, it's that narrative. It's a false narrative. And I really do believe that he will be second team at worst all NBA.
Yeah. So I think I'd give it around, I think probably 80% chance that he's an all NBA player. Yeah. I think third team all NBA, especially has a full season. And Minnesota can win some more games. I think that's probably the most important thing is that they need to win. Yes. They need to win games. If they win 30 games again, he probably doesn't make any team. And if they win 45, or even if they win, you know, 40 and come ninth, that's still probably enough to you know, showcase his abilities, especially if he plays a full season, and especially if he plays the way he started out this season and the way he played when he was healthy. But second team, I'd probably put it at around 40%. I know just because of that narrative around him. I think, like you said, like if you've got that narrative that you don't play defense, it really hurts you in the media circles. And I think he'd have to not only become a better defender, but he'd have to become a really good defender just to break that narrative. I mean, just becoming a better defender probably doesn't even help him next season. It probably takes at least a few seasons of becoming an average defender or one season of being a really good defender for him to actually change that narrative.
Yep. And from a percentage standpoint, I'll preface this first part. This isn't the fan. Let's just say this. The fan in me would say, oh, well, he will 100% be second team all NBA. But the realist in me who analyzes basketball, watches film, is writes for the, about the Timberwolves and observes what the rest of the country and the world, for example, like you, thinks of Cat. I'm putting it at 25%.
Yeah.
And just because it's, I know the narrative out there for better, and I don't agree with it. I truly don't. But I don't see a guy like Gobert taking a step back, and it's just tough. Jokic isn't going to take a step back. Embiid, I don't know. We'll see. His competition is, those are guys that people love to talk about positively.
And they're all all-time centers, especially Embiid and Jokic. Like, they've both proven themselves as probably, you know, two of the top three centers in the league year on year. Mm-hmm. Towns is up there with them, but he's, right now, he's kind of fighting fighting an uphill battle since he wasn't in there. He wasn't in there last season, and he probably won't be this season either.
Yeah, 25%. I hate to say it. That's just the realistic. I just don't see that the voters putting him up there. They don't respect him.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so we're getting to your second one.
Sure. So for me, the next one I've got is that the Timberwolves actually have the lottery work in their favor for once in their life, and they actually end up with the top three pick, and they end up with Killian Hayes or Denny. I don't even want Denny Avdija. I don't know how to pronounce that.
Yeah, Avdija, I think. Avdija.
Avdija. It's probably, yeah. But I think walking away with one of those guys, oh my God. I mean, Killian Hayes, there's a lot of redundancy in his game to D'Lo, and that does scare me. But I think walking away with a guy like that, if he can run the second unit, it's not all about putting him next to D'Lo. It's about looking at the team as a whole, because a second unit guy is good for 20 plus minutes, 15, 20, 25 minutes. And that's vital to your team's success. You can't put out a scrub backup point guard to run the offense the way you want and win. And I love J-Mac, and I want to keep him around as a third option. But ending up with a guy like Killian Hayes to run that second unit or even to play off ball, I get nervous about the redundancy, but I think they wind up with him or Denny Avdija, a guy who also can play at a very high level and fits a huge need for the Wolves. I don't think Rosas is going to draft for need. But I truly believe, you know, top three pick and walking away with one of those guys.
Yeah, I've spoken about Hayes a ton on here, and I've wrote about him as well. And I really love Killian Hayes as a prospect. Like you said, I'm not as high on him as a fit in Minnesota, but I'd still be very happy if they drafted Hayes. He's number one on my board at the moment, probably flip-flopping with Anthony Edwards each day. So I'd really love Killian Hayes. I'm a little more skeptical on Avdija. I think he's been immense in his last few games since the forced hiatus. But the small sample size there still worries me. Not that he wasn't good before that, but just that it seems that his three-point shooting and free-throw shooting have both taken an uptick lately. Yep. But I think that's still the mystery, I guess. Is he shooting? That really defines his ceiling for me. I love his blend of size and speed and smarts on both ends. He's really good passing in transition, really good cutter, quite a good slasher. I don't think he creates space for himself overly well as a scorer, but he still finds ways to get buckets and a really fun playmaker as well for a guy who's 6'9". And then,
and that's the thing is being 6'9", he's a guy that I think he can guard the 2, the 3, the 4. And granted, you know, it's one of those things where the talent he's going against, it's hard to really analyze. But he can pass pretty well, pretty athletic, great size, can play solid defense. I'd say he's pretty NBA ready for a 19-year-old.
Yeah, he's a really good like rotational defender. Like, I think he can be a power forward in this league pretty comfortably.
And he can handle the ball better than most power forwards. I would say it's pretty crazy to me that he was born in 2001. That's insane to me. I'm very old. But I think, you know, he's a guy that I don't buy the small sample size. I buy upside. I'm not looking at his past couple games where he's averaging 20, whatever he's at. I don't even care. I've been watching. But long term, I look at a guy like that. Like, that's a Rosas guy. Like, Culver, similarly, like Texas Tech ran their offense entirely through that guy, and he wasn't necessarily going to step in and be an NBA like day one big time contributor, but it's a guy that you think, oh wow, down the road, this is someone we can really, you know, be a huge part of our system. So I would say with him, similarly. And additionally, back to Killian Hayes, I think he's the best player in the draft. I genuinely do. I'm really, really high on Anthony Edwards. I know people would call him Wiggins. I think it's kind of lazy. I'm not trying to get too off topic here, but from a talent standpoint, I think he's got equally as much talent. Yeah, I think if you can walk away with one of those guys who's playing overseas top three, I mean, and then you've got the 16th pick, you're in a wonderful spot with either of those guys. And I know, you know, he's not as high on your board, Avdija, and I know you've got, you know, Vassell and Hayes and those guys up there. But I think if we can walk away with one of those guys, I mean, the Wolves are in a great spot.
Yeah, and I definitely... As much as I said, yeah, I am a little bit more skeptical on Avdija, but I'd still be very happy if Minnesota got him. I think he fits pretty well in this system. Like you said, I think he is a Rosas guy. I think if he does develop that shot, especially just more as a spot-up shooter, I think on this team he wouldn't be asked to create a lot of shots for himself, and that really plays into his game. So I think if he was just asked to be kind of a secondary or tertiary creator, play good defense, you know, rebound a little bit, and then can hit spot up threes as well. I think that's the kind of player who they'd really like, and then obviously a bunch of potential to grow into even more than that. So what percentage do you think that will happen? I guess it's hard because it's...
Oh, man. Zero? I mean, it's the Timberwolves and the lottery. no, honestly, I would say less than 50. I'd say 40%. And my concern is that the highest percent chance, as you know, the highest percent chance is that the Timberwolves end up with the seventh pick. And they're like the team that would end up not moving. You know, that's the pick. They're going to get the pick that they have the highest percentage of getting. That's just who they are, unfortunately. It's just the way that the world works for the Timberwolves. So I would say 40%. I mean, by a miracle, We I think it's either seventh or like second, and they just climb up the board. So I'd say 40.
Yeah, I had 40 as well. I think like you said, it's obviously a tough ask in general for Minnesota to even move up in the draft, and then or to even stay where they are because they're so used to falling down picks, and then they also have to, you know, draft one of them two guys when I guess there's probably going to be other guys on the board that they admire as well. Like we said, Edwards is probably, I think, the guy. I think if they got number one, Edwards would probably be the guy they went with. So it's just, yeah. Yeah, so it's kind of just it's a bit of a you know, crapshoot there. We'll get into my one. So I kind of went the opposite for this one. I had that they'll miss the playoffs, but they'll get a top three pick and keep their pick for the next season. Mm-hmm. So obviously Golden State have Minnesota's pick unless it's a top three pick for next year from the D'Angelo Russell and Andrew Wiggins trade. So I think that while they miss the playoffs, these are all, like I said, predictions. You kind of go either way on them. Like I said before, I think they could definitely make the playoffs, but I think this is a scenario that would still work out really well for Minnesota. Obviously, it's short-term pain for long-term gain. I want to make the playoffs just like all you guys do. But it's certainly still an optimistic kind of pick in my eyes just because if they can be a fringe playoff team, I'm counting on some luck that Minnesota have never had to kind of go from, you know, a ninth or tenth seed to a top three pick in the lottery. And then after that, I think this team will really find the final piece of the puzzle. Number one will get you Cade Cunningham, a franchise altering 6'8" point guard, shooting guard, who literally has no holes coming out of high school. Number two, you know, after that, you can get guys like Jonathan Kuminga, Jalen Green, Scotty Barnes, Jalen Suggs, a Minnesota native. All those guys are the type of players who would probably I think I'd have all of those guys at number one in this draft. Just for reference, they're all really, really good talents. And, I think as much as it would hurt to miss the playoffs this season, if they could somehow still sneak a top three pick, maybe pay off Adam Silver in the process, kind of get a little bit of under the table lottery action working. I think that would be that would really set them up for success in the future.
Yeah, I think if the Timberwolves have a top three pick, I mean, my God, it's going to be a hard conversation to have with Rosas because that something's not going right.
If they have a top three pick because they were one of the bottom three teams in the league, I think that definitely changes the story. Yeah. Whereas if they just miss the playoffs and then they get some lottery luck, I'm not as concerned.
Yeah. No, that's fair. I mean, I'd say in terms of the 2021 draft, it was it says a lot that the Warriors wanted that pick. Not only that, obviously it's a great draft. Everyone knows that. The biggest concern there was it's only top three protected. And that tells you one thing, that the Warriors said, hey, yeah, you can have D'Lo and we still think we're going to get your pick. So, that's terrifying to me. However, if they do end up, let's say with a top three pick, like you said, Cade Cunningham, one of the best point guards, in a very long time. He's smaller than him, but he's got a lot of Ben Simmons to him. Jalen Green, Jonathan Kuminga. I went to Texas Tech, so I went there for a couple years, and he's about to commit this weekend or next week. So it's either Texas Tech or the G League because his brother plays for Texas Tech. Jonathan Kuminga, that man can. I mean, my God, that draft is just loaded. I mean, if they get a top three pick, it's going to be like a potential superstar. We're either going to be Cade Cunningham, Jalen Green, or Jonathan Kuminga, which all of them have like elite, like all NBA first team upside. So all of a sudden, if you have that paired with D'Lo and Kat, I mean, the conversation, and then like even Beasley, I mean, my God, you're talking about like going from like having a top three pick to like legitimately being able to compete at a very high level the following year. Injuries or something get in the way, because I can't fathom having a top three pick outside of that.
Yeah, exactly. I think in that scenario, it'd be one of the ones where it just really hurts, especially like you said, if they got a top three pick from actually being that bad, but it could also springboard them into the best they've been for a long time. So it's a risky game to try and play. I doubt that Minnesota will even think about tanking next season. But if they do somehow, if they're 10-30 after 40 games, I think it wouldn't be a bad idea to just go and get that top three pick, because there is just a ton of talent.
Absolutely. I will absolutely lose my mind. If we're 10-30, I will. I mean, you're going to have to check in on me, make sure I'm doing all right.
All right. Well, so for the percentage wise for that one,
sure.
I had about 40%, 50% that they missed the playoffs. Ooh. Because, I said, I'm still iffy on that. And then about 5% that they get a top pick, just because I don't think they missed the playoffs by that much. And they'd have to they'd have to move up at least 5 or 6 spots in the lottery to get a top three pick.
I mean, based off how the lottery falls for the Timberwolves, and honestly, I think with the way the team is going, I'd say 0%, truly. I truly believe that. I just think that there's too much talent at the 1, the 2, and the 5 for the Timberwolves next year to be that bad. I don't care. Defense, so be it. I think you can win with great offense. Win a championship, but I just don't see a way where they're in the lottery next year. I just don't.
Yeah, so I'd say 0. For me, I think, it's obviously been spoken about, the horse has been beaten as much as you could ever beat it about the draft being quite weak, but I think there's a really good chance that Minnesota strengthen themselves now and strengthen themselves for the future in this draft, especially with the two picks that are probably going to be top 16, maybe even, a number one pick. So I think there's a really good chance that you can kind of cement your core, put another player next to Townsend, Russell, and Beasley, and just I think if they hit on the draft in those two picks, and then maybe even at 33 as well, if they don't trade them, that's a really big for them. I'll get into that a bit more later though. So what's your number three?
Yeah, number three I made specifically for you. So if you're listening to this for the first time, I just want to make a little statement. I have nothing by saying this. I gain nothing from saying this other than the fact that as a fan myself and a lover of Timberwolves basketball, this podcast is a must listen. So I go to the gym at 7 a.m. 4 days a week, which is about four. It's about a 30, 40 minute drive from me. I go there four times a week. I have a trainer, but that's beside the point. The point being is that it's an hour plus drive where I listen. I finish about an episode every drive. And, this is must listen if you're a Timberwolves fan. I mean, this is an incredible podcast. Jake has great knowledge. The conversation flows. It feels like you're with him. So just want to acknowledge you on that. But my main reason for saying that is that I think the Timberwolves are going to be stuck at number seven where their best odds are, because that is peak Timberwolves in the lottery. But they get your boy, Devin Vassell, the next Kelly Oubre. And I think that would be, I mean, if we could have 7 and 16, I mean, and Vassell's there. I mean, all of a sudden you got the best, I'd say second best shooting guard in the draft. 6'7", very athletic. The shot, I think, is good. I think he's one of those guys that just is going to get better and better and better and better and better. Like, honestly, a 7, if he's there, that's great. If he's there at 4, I'd take him. I mean, 3 even, maybe I'd consider it. I mean, Just very athletic, runs the floor great. Obviously tall, like I think his wingspan is almost, it's like 7 feet. He can shoot the 3. I mean, I don't think he took that many, but I mean.
Around 4 a game, I think. So it's still a pretty decent sample size, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I know he has good mid-range game. Obviously don't want to, that's not something that we're going to try to emphasize here in Minnesota, but I mean, he's just a dude that, like, he's one of those guys that, like, 5 years from now, kind of similar to Jonathan Isaac. I obviously, that's kind of an interesting one, because where you're going to look back and think, like, why didn't we take this guy?
Yeah.
Why weren't we talking about this guy pre-draft? Why were we so focused? Because if you're in the top 5, you're thinking LaMelo Ball, you're thinking Killian Hayes, you're talking even Abdia and those types. So you're not even really, I don't think you're talking. You're not hearing Devin Vassell outside of this podcast a ton. I think he's a guy that you're going to look at and just, if he can improve that offense, just, you know, from an isolation standpoint, just a little bit. Yeah. I mean, my God, I mean, it's a whole different conversation. And he could, it's just an upside pick where he's one of those guys, like I said, where, you know, 5 years from now, you're like, this dude might be the first, second, third, like top, one of the best 3 guys from the draft.
Yeah, I think his floor is a lot lower than a lot of guys up in the mm-hmm. top, you know, the top half of the lottery. Mm-hmm. And then I think his upside is a lot higher than people, you know, I'd admit, just because I think he's got that kind of the very safe game about him, you know, that 3-and-D type of player. But I think he's got a lot of upside as a shot creator. I'd like to see him get to the rim more and get to the line a little bit more. I think that's going to be the real bugaboo for him. But I think there's just so much potential as a guy who can average, you know, 15 to 18 a game, and then be your team's best off-ball defender, hold his own as an on-ball defender as well, and then kind of, you know, just do a little bit of everything. He's not really a playmaker, but he never makes bad decisions. He never forces the issue. I've talked about him a ton on this podcast. You know my feelings. The listeners know my feelings on Devin Vassell. Favorite player in the draft. I'd be happy with mm-hmm. him at any point, to be honest.
When it comes to athleticism, I think he's one of the, like, I think his upside is really, really high. I mean, I don't think, maybe a lot of people don't think that, but he's one of those guys, just cut the film. I mean, just, I think he might struggle scoring at a relatively decent level early on, but he's one of those guys where just, like, development is crucial, and I think he could end up being, like an absolute steal in the draft. Yeah. And they're truly, I mean, I'm not saying the Timberwolves are a great team, but from a developmental standpoint, there might not be a better situation for a guy like that. When you look at what we provide in both the G League and the way that this system is built, just incredible development. Like look at Naz Reid, for example. I mean, I think he'd be a tremendous pick.
Yeah. And then I think on top of that is that he also fits extremely well positionally in this team. I think he's probably he could be a two. I think he played a lot of two at Florida State, but I think he's probably a three in the lead with the size that he has. I think he's got, like you said, really long wingspan. He can probably guard a lot of threes and even maybe shift up to the four and pinch hit as a small ball four. But I think there's a hole in this lineup at the three. I mean, I love Josh Okogie, but he's not a small forward. And then there's obviously a hole at the four as well. I think there's also many holes on the defensive end, which is exactly where Vassell is going to flourish. I think he's going to thrive as an off-ball defender. He's got that Robert Covington about him where he just makes plays from nowhere. You know what I mean? He's always got his head on a swivel, never ever takes a defensive play off and never kind of just stands there and zones out for a second. He's always looking to break up a play, to make a weak side block, to throw those long arms in and grab a steal. So yeah, my favorite player in the draft.
Go ahead. Yeah, percentage.
Yeah, you go. You can go.
Confidence that I'd say, well, there's three levels to this. Is he there at seven? I think he is.
Yeah.
Do the Timberwolves move up? Maybe not. History would say no. And is he the best player available at seven? Yes, he would be. I would say, I mean, honestly, based off odds, everything statistically speaking, I'd say 75%. I think the Timberwolves are most likely to be at seven, and I think he would make the most sense. So I'd say like genuinely like a 75% chance that the Timberwolves are, come lottery night, drafting seventh and they take Devin Vassell.
Yeah, I had about 90% chance that Vassell falls to seven. I think, like you said, I think a lot of the top five, six will probably be real upside plays. And then I think, just assuming that Minnesota do fall to seven, I think there's about an 80% chance that they'd take him in that range as well. Obviously, we don't work in the Timberwolves front office, so we could never actually know, but I think it just makes so much sense there, especially if they're seeing what I'm seeing and what a lot of other smart draft people are seeing. I think it's an 80% chance they take him at seven.
I agree. And I think, unless there's some Jake paintings out there, who would take him number one overall, he'll be there at seven.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So we get into my, is it third one? I'm not sure.
You think losing, it is your third one.
Yeah. I'm losing track, but anyway.
I'm not good at math.
Yeah. So mine was I transitioned a little bit into the free agency for this one. But I went, Minnesota land Jeremy Grant in free agency. So we've spoken about Grant's fit on this podcast before, and it's becoming a bit of a dream, I guess, around Timberwolves circles of late. I seem to be seeing his name mentioned a ton, but that's because he's just an awesome fit. I think he had a fairly down year in Denver compared to his kind of usual standards. Still shot 40% from deep, which is a career high. Still impacts the game in a lot of ways as a weak side defender. Switchable defender who can guard twos, threes, fours. He can probably even guard a small ball fives in a pinch. He fits this team's run and gun, you know, 3-point launching, small ball unit perfectly. He might be the best power forward fit for Minnesota, I think, as in terms of free agents. He would do a lot, I think, for Towns as a weak side cover on the defensive end, and then he doesn't command big usage on offense. He's not going to, you know, sulk when D'Angelo Russell and Anthony Towns are taking 20 shots a night. He's going to come in, he's going to do his bit, he's going to hit open threes, he's going to attack off the dribble when he gets, you know, when the defense closes out hard at him. He's going to post the dudes, he's going to, you know, grab his fair share of rebounds enough to kind of to not tank a team's rebounding. And then I think he's probably gettable at the full mid-level exception over multiple years. I think the mid-level exception is about $9.5 million off the top of my head. So I think you'd be getting for something like 4 years, $35 million. I think that's good job security for him. It's still a movable contract if, you know, in 2 years down the track, it hasn't gone very well. And then, yeah, I think they can offer him a pretty consistent role as well, which I'm sure is something he'll be looking for after kind of spending a lot of the season coming off the bench for Denver. Yeah, I think it's just up to, I guess, him opting out of his player option and then choosing to come and live in Minnesota and, you know, the usual hurdles that this team always faces.
I mean, yeah, no, so a good buddy of mine is a huge Thunder fan, so I take pride in, like, actively rooting against them because I think it's really funny. However, I mean, first of all, to address your getting him to come to Minnesota point, I mean, he played in Oklahoma City and Philadelphia, so, I mean, there's not a ton going on there. I can confidently say Minneapolis is a much more fun town. But, you know, yeah, again, Denver is an interesting one because it's, I'll tell you, they are a deep team. It is really hard to carve out a role there and feel like, you know, you're successful. I mean, look at Malik Beasley, for example, even Wancho. I mean, there's so much depth there that it's hard to, like, find your rhythm. But looking back at the 2018-19 season, Jeremy Grant, when he was in OKC, I mean, he was balling. I mean, he had his career high. He averaged almost 14 points a game. I mean, he was shooting almost 50% from the field. Granted, actually, he shot almost 40% from three. Granted, like, he doesn't take a ton of threes, but he's incredible. I mean, I love Jeremy Grant. He's, like, what, 26 years old? He's not old. He's, like, 25, 26. He's young. I mean, if you could get him on a four-year deal, he's the type of guy that you need here if you're Gersan Rosas, because you're putting all your money, your money, you know, in these Cat and D'Lo and whoever that third quote unquote option may be. He's a guy that just can do it all. Just the true, like, he can defend, he can score, he can shoot. He'll do the nasty work, and he's young and he fits that timeline. And most importantly, a mid-level, if you can get him, like, at a four-year, $32 million, $80 a year or whatever it is, I mean, like, that's what you need. You need a guy like him. You need a Jake Layman who's, I think he's, like, six a year or something like that. I don't know off the top of my head. It's not a ton of money. You need guys like that that can really drive you. And, again, I really look back to that 2018-19 season with him in OKC, where that was his third season there, so he probably felt a little more at home. And he balled out. I mean, that's exactly what you want out of the guy. I mean, that's what you want out of your 4/3. He can play the 3. He can play the 4. I mean, everything you need. 6'8", 215. Perfect. Would love to welcome him in Minnesota. He's a great fit. Perfect.
Yeah.
I completely agree with you.
And I think if they are committed to the Townsend-Russell pairing, which I think they obviously are, and then they're willing to throw, you know, decently big money at Beasley to keep him around as well, you really need to hit on those role players and kind of find the players who fit around those guys really well. And I think Jeremy Grant has proven pretty much everywhere he went that he fits pretty well. Even in a down year in Denver, I still think he did a lot of good things, and he still, I don't think it was the fit necessarily that kind of that drove his value down a little bit, but I think more just the fact, like you said, that Denver is just hella deep, and you know it's hard to kind of find yourself a consistent role there. And I think, like I said, that would be maybe the biggest selling point for Minnesota, is that, like, you can come in and you can be the starting four. And right now, you pretty much don't have any real competition to take those minutes away from you. I mean, like Wancho, I don't know if Wancho will be back or not, but if he is, I don't think there's any chance he would start over Jeremy Grant. No. And I think Grant could easily find himself 30 minutes a night, like you said, and just do a lot of those things that he did in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And not to get off topic here, once I'm talking basketball, it's hard not to, but... I mean, Wancho, again, yeah, I heard it on one of your previous podcasts. I think it was when you had, obviously you've had Jack on a few times, but I mean, he truly, the more I listened to you about that, like, the more I was able to let go of some delusional thoughts. Wancho's not a starter, at least not right now. I completely agree with your sentiment on that. I know you referenced that on a previous podcast, so if you guys are listening, definitely check that out. Jeremy Grant, yeah, he would fit perfect. If you can get a guy like that and then have a guy like Wancho off the bench, it's a whole different conversation. I mean, he can't play defense, but I mean, you know, he can step in and score at a decent level off the bench. So, yeah, I would love to see Jeremy Grant. And from a, you know, I'd say from a percentage standpoint, my biggest concern there is, as I really am trying to dissect, like, let me get to know Gersan Rosas a bit. For this specific, you know, conversation, my concern is I don't know that Rosas is going to use the mid-level exception. He's like an asset builder guy, and I don't know if he's going to want to use that on the mid-level, and whether that be a one-year mid-level, sure. But I think that Grant's going to get around that mid-level, but he's going to get a multiple-year deal. And my biggest concern is that Rosas isn't going to want
to go down
that road.
I think that's a very valid concern. I think, like you said, maybe a one-year deal. Maybe they split up the MLE. Mm-hmm. You know, and kind of try and sign a couple of role players to it. Maybe even they do Wancho a bit of it, which I wouldn't really love. But you know, you never know what they're going to do. And like you said, he's going to try and collect as many assets as possible. And if that means, you know, that Jeremy Grant is too great an investment, then that would make sense.
Yeah, I was going to say. I mean, I completely agree. I think this is a weird offseason because with everything going on in the world, I don't know what free agency looks like. I think it works in Timberwolves' favor specifically for a guy like Malik Beasley, who I know for a fact turned down, I don't know what it was, but he turned down a decent offer from Denver.
I think 3 years, $30 million.
Which is like, I mean, for based off the role he had there, I mean, he was basically betting on himself to get traded and then, you know, ball it out, which it worked out for him. But I don't see him getting much more than that. But point being, I think Rosas has proven in his short time here that he hasn't shown that he's willing to pay other than Jake Layman. I mean, I don't see him willing to just toss out money long term unless you're a guy that he thinks can be a star or a potential like huge impact. So I think for a guy like Jeremy Grant, teams are going to want to sign him to multiple-year deals, specifically teams that are on the cusp of championships. I mean, if you could get a guy like that on a Lakers team or a Clippers team, I mean, you're talking about a guy that can truly get you over the edge, especially if you have him maybe even coming off the bench. I mean, my God. But I think that Rosas will split up that mid-level and he will spend it on one-year deal, kind of like the Jordan Bell. And to his point, when he did that, I knew there was – you know, he's cooking something up here, right? And it was obviously for D'Lo. It worked out. But you look at a Jordan Bell contract, these one-year deals, I think he loves playing that role because he's a huge asset builder. So I'll just answer the point right now. From a percentage standpoint, I love Jeremy Grant. I would be so fired up if we signed him to a multiple-year deal on, say, $7-9 million a year. But I'd say it's very low. I'd say it's like 25% because I just – based off the short time we've had with Gersan Rosas, I think it's proven that he's going to try to use that on one-year deals and trade those at the deadline.
I had it at 30% as well. Obviously, I love the fit and love the idea of Jeremy Grant coming to Minnesota. But yeah, I think there's just so many factors that factor into free agency. Like as much as we sit here and say how much Jeremy Grant would fit with Minnesota, there's probably 15 at least other teams who are thinking the same thing, who all have the MLE as well to use as well. So factor into that along with, you know, Rosas's so far kind of not wanting to sign long-term deals and to box himself in flexibility-wise. I think, I'd say maybe 30%, 25% just because.
And what he's doing is very smart for a team that has not been good for a long time. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't, there's not a lot that I kind of disagree with the way Rosas has gone about it so far. This team, you've got Russell and Towns on max contracts, and as much as I love watching them both play right now, they're kind of unproven whether they can really take a team over the hump. I think that you need to be really flexible outside of that just because you need to be able to find the right guys on pretty cheap contracts. So you don't want to box yourself into a Jeremy Grant. But I also think that personally, I don't think it would be that bad of a move.
Sure. No, I agree.
So what's your next one?
Yeah, so before I say this, I want to say I did add one at the end that I'm going to hit you with. It'll be a little surprise, but I do have all one right. more that I want to add nice. There. I think it came to me literally the last 20 seconds. I think it's vital that we talk about it. But so another thing where I was listening to your podcast recently, and I it really got me to do a deep dive on this guy where I just thought I like fell in love with the prospect. I am higher on him than any prospect in the draft. I'm obsessed with this guy. Let me just start that in like a normal way. But I think that with the 16th pick in the draft or whatever it is, the Nets pick, the Timberwolves are going to draft Kyra Lewis.
Yeah.
Or Kira, I don't know, whatever. He out of Alabama, just turn on the film. My God, this dude can he could blow by NBA defender today. He's 19 years old. I think he's as athletic as they come. My concern, he's undersized. Point being, I think we're drafting him at 60, at whatever pick we have. And, he's a little undersized to play the point. Or not the point, but he's small. He's small. He's 6'3". He's listed at 170. I don't think he's 170. I'm concerned about his ability to play defense at a high level based on his size. But he reminds me a lot of Russell Westbrook, smaller version. I think it'd be more fair to compare him to the guy that has replaced Russell Westbrook, which is like Shai Gilgeous, but,
yeah,
he's so fast. He's so athletic. He just blows by people. It's disgusting to watch. I mean, I'm obsessed with this guy. I think from a ceiling standpoint, if the Timberwolves can, keep that Nets pick and draft Kyra Lewis, he is a stud. If he can turn it on like the way Westbrook does, I mean, he can finish at the rim at a high level. He's got to, just athleticism. I can't say it enough. Turn on the film if you're listening to this, and you will be blown away by his first step. The guy can ball. I don't know what his, what his 3-point shot's going to look like. I think he shot like 35, 36% from three, something like that in college. Not great. That's not what you're asking him to do if he's leading the second unit. And I think he could play really well next to D'Lo in a pinch. So I would say, again, if the Timberwolves are picking at 15, 16, whatever the pick is, if they're going to take Kyra Lewis and he's going to be the backup point guard the Timberwolves, you could say, have never had. I love Tyus Jones, I really do. But this guy can come in and really not lead a stagnant. Come in and really keep things.
Yeah, I fully agree. I think it was last week where I talked about Lewis with Jack, and I did the same thing. I hadn't watched as much of him as I would have liked before last week, but I watched a ton during this week before today. And like you said, he's just a crazy, crazy fast. Mm-hmm. Can get to the rim. I think he does struggle a little bit around the rim finishing sometimes. Sure. Just because he is such a small dude compared to others, but he still puts a lot of pressure on the rim. He finished in the 79th percentile as a transition scorer, 62nd percentile as a pick and roll ball handler, shot 41.3% on spot up threes. So it was kind of the off the dribble threes that let him down a little bit, just because he had to take so many shots off the dribble in Alabama's offense. He kind of was that offense at times. He's also 18-year-old sophomore, which is crazy young, for where he is in his development, to already have played two years at Alabama before, he even gets to the NBA before his 19th birthday. I think that's huge for him. Like, he'll come in as a 19-year-old who's already got a lot more experience than a lot of other, players his age. He's just, like you said, he's the kind of player who I think can give you 10 to 15 a night off the bench almost immediately, and really, really keep things ticking as a second unit and just be that kind of offensive fulcrum that meshes together that second unit. I'd be really happy with Kyle Lewis at 16. I think it's hard for me to see him not becoming at least a really good backup, and if not, he's, you know, potentially is higher than that as a pretty decent starter.
And the thing I would say, you know, about that is when the finishing at the rim, I get that, and I understand that that's a concern. But here's one thing you can't teach is athleticism, and being good at basketball. One thing you can teach and work at is getting stronger. Unless you're, for whatever reason, unless your name is Andrew Wiggins, you can't put on muscle. I love Wiggins. I'll never hate him. But you get this guy in an NBA strength and conditioning system, put on some size and like really test him in the paint, and you know, he can finish. I mean, you can make a decision as a human being to put on muscle mass. You can't make a decision to be a good athlete and a good basketball player. He has those two things. The third thing is, can you finish at the rim? And I think that comes a lot with strength. And I think that's something that he can really, truly, you know, be able to accomplish.
Yeah, I agree. I think I think that's why he seems to be kind of rocketing up a lot of draft boards at the moment, is just because it's pretty easy to see, you know, that path to development for him. Like, he put on a bit of strength, continued to polish up that 3-point shooting. He's a pretty good passer as well. I don't think he's kind of a guy who's going to wow you with his playmaking abilities, but he seems to make the right pass a lot. He does a lot of those kind of drive and kicks where he gets all the way under the ring and then flings it out to a corner shooter or to a shooter in the slot. That's a really important play if you can collapse the defense and hit 3-point shooters. That's something that Minnesota needs a lot of. I think that's one of the one areas that D'Angelo Russell does struggle with, because he doesn't get to the rim as much as a lot of other guys. But that's something that we saw with like Jordan McLaughlin, who, you know, would use that really sneaky, that small and quick pace to kind of get towards the rim, collapse the defense, fire it out to a shooter. And that's what I think Saunders wants. I think that's what Rosas wants, is a drive and kick, you know, 3-point heavy offense. And I think Lewis would fit into that offense really nicely.
I completely agree. He's a stud. I mean, he really, I know, I think you had him top 10 on your board, did you not?
Yeah, I have him 10, I think, at the moment, just
Which is like, we need to stop talking about that, because I think that NBA teams don't have him that high, and we want to make sure that he falls to us. Because I don't know. I mean, he's one of those guys where, like, in a traditional draft, I'm like, just watch the film. How is this guy not a top 10 pick? Wherein, like, you look at big boards from some of the, you know, the experts, and he's not even close to the top 10 in a lot of them. So, yeah. I mean, let's see if he can fall to us.
What chance do you have? What percentage do you have of him falling and then them drafting him?
I think he'll fall. I would say that I have a 75% chance he falls. But I would say, in terms of him falling and the Timberwolves drafting him, I'd say I'd put it at honestly 70%. And my reason behind that being is that, you know, if and when he falls to that Nets pick, please Nets make the playoffs. How do you pass on a guy like that? I mean, he's a ball handler. He can run an offense. He just seems like Rosas. That just screams Rosas. Like, let's just go ahead and get this guy who has tremendous upside to run an NBA offense, whether it's to be in Minnesota or to flip for a pick for a future asset. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So I'd say 60-ish%.
I had it about 70% as well that he falls. I think, like you said, it's pretty well known, not well known, but I guess around, you know, guys like Kevin O'Connor and stuff who actually get to talk to a lot of front offices before they make their boards and stuff. I think most of them have him fallen pretty low. I think it's probably more of a 40% chance that they draft him. I think I'm still not overly confident that Minnesota will take a point guard. I think they I think they probably will, because there's just so many point guards in this draft, and they need to, if, you know, if they do take three bites of that draft apple, I think they're probably gonna take a point guard with one of them. But then I guess you know, I factor in just how many there are, and I guess it'll be pretty easy for them to fall in love with someone else, you know, a Tyrell Terry or even a Cole Anthony or someone falls to 16, you know, in like, someone's always going to fall, or someone's always going to get taken higher than they should. So I think it's so hard to predict with the lottery. But yeah, I'd have it about 40% chance, just because I think if they are going to take a point guard, he would definitely be one of the guys they're looking at.
100%.
So my last one is, I think the Wolves will take all three of their players, all three of the draft picks, which I think, I mean, I'm not sure on that. Obviously, like, I think they'll definitely be looking for trades, but I don't know how much other teams will be willing to give up in this climate with a draft that's got a, you know, pretty historically bad rep for it right now. So I'm not sure, and I don't think Rosas will make a trade just to make a trade, you know, with that top three pick or whatever. I think he would only make it if he truly believes that he's getting an asset that's really valuable. So I think they might end up selecting all three picks, and I think one of them guys ends up as a top three Rookie of the Year candidate, if not a Rookie of the Year. I think there are a ton of players in this class who are pretty, you know, dependent on a system to help them thrive, especially in their first year. And I think Minnesota's system, which I haven't said that a lot over the years, that Minnesota's system actually lends itself to a lot of these players. I think top picks like Anthony Edwards or Killian Hayes, who was spoken about, guys like Vassell, even like Tyrese Maxey or Tyrese Halliburton, I think both of those guys, Minnesota is one of their best fits. Even second round, you know, long shots like a Paul Reed or a Desmond Bain.
Yep.
I think they're again guys who could definitely come in and be instant impact players. And I'm not sure. I think there'll be a lot of players this season who will kind of come in and maybe not have the system that really helps them shine. But I think Minnesota has a system that really lends itself, to a lot of players in this class.
Yeah, I in terms of drafting all three picks, I it's hard. I don't know if they will. I mean, the thing is to suggest that it's a quote unquote weak draft, I think, you know, is unfair in the sense that there's not a Zion in this draft.
I think there's a lot of really good role players, but there's not. There might even not be a bunch of all stars. You know what I mean? I think there's probably. I think that's where it's weak. But I don't think it's weak in depth. No. I think there's definitely going to be. You know, I think a lot of the players in the draft will stay in the league and will help teams win. But I don't think they'll be the chief player on a team.
Yeah, and I think that's totally fair. I think the draft is better than a lot of people think. In terms of, I think there are a couple all stars that will come out of the draft.
And there always is. Every time a weak, quote unquote weak draft class comes along, there's always someone who gets taken at 45 who ends up, you know, a star. So it's super hard to predict.
Yeah, and I think if you're drafting three picks, all of a sudden, I think, based off where the Timberwolves are drafting, all three of them should absolutely step in and contribute, whether that's at a very high level or not. You're looking at, you know, the first pick of the second pick of the, you know, they're picking high in the first and second round, additionally with the additional first round pick that they have. So if in the second round you can get a guy like Paul Reed out of DePaul, which is a small school, he's extremely good. There's no reason that you can't have three contributors. And ultimately, I think that you know, those three guys are always going to be viewed as assets. But I think that you know, when Rosas was drafting last year, it's a different mentality of, okay, who's a guy that 100%, like, you know, he's not going to be the Rookie of the Year, but who can come in with this pick? He traded up to get a point guard. because he missed out on D'Lo, right? He didn't get Darius Garland because he went to the Cavs, which no one thought, right? But point being, he took a guy that who's the highest upside, because my team doesn't have a ton of that right now, whereas the roster is 1,000% different. So for him, it's different in the sense that I still think he's going all, you know, high upside, you know, asset driven. But certainly if you're drafting all three picks, that's not a bad thing. The Timberwolves going into this draft are in a great spot. They've got two cornerstones and three picks. So let's say they end up with a top three pick. They get a guy who's going to contribute day one. Let's say they get stuck at seven. They're going to get Devin Vassell. He's going to contribute at a high level. So I think it is realistic that they keep all three picks based on the narrative that this draft isn't great. Although I think there is a discrepancy between the media's perception of a draft and the front offices of the NBA. I think that certainly it's very realistic that we take all three picks, and that most importantly, all three picks are contributing.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's just, if, like you said, if you have your stars in place, you really do need a draft well, and to have three draft picks is a really important thing for this team. I think even if, you know, it is the weak draft class that everyone says it is, having three chances to hit a home run, you know, is better than one. So I think three picks in the top 33, it's really important for this team. And if they can't find a suitable trade, which I'm sure they will definitely look to shop either of them three trades, maybe even package a few of them together for an Aaron Gordon type or someone who we're not going to get into. I know you love Aaron Gordon as well. But, you know, I think they'll try and do that. But if they can't, they'll have no problem kind of taking three players and trying to hit a home run on one of them.
No, I agree. And that's what it is. Like, that was a really good point, is that you got three chances to get it right. I mean, not many teams get to say that in the NBA. There's two rounds. You got three chances to get it right. And that's why I think that it's likely that they could take all three. But most importantly, that they're taking upside guys there. And I think that it's a lot easier to not play it safe when you have that many picks. So I think it's very realistic that it's hard to make a trade in the NBA. It's not an easy thing. So I think it's realistic that they take all three picks, whether they're here long term or not. Still very, very feasible that they do that.
Yeah, I think I'd give it about a 60% chance that they take all three, and then I think maybe a 20% chance that one of those three guys are a top three rookie of the year candidate.
Sure. I'd say I'm at about a 40% chance that they take all three. But if they do, I'd say, you know, you're looking at a 60-65% chance that it's the rookie of the year, because you got three chances. I think mainly you got two chances to draft a rookie of the year there. And I think that based off Gerson's mentality, you're looking at two guys that are tremendous upside guys that if they do what they could do, they'd win rookie of the year. So
I think the one caveat there is that whatever player comes in is probably not going to have the leeway of a player that's, say, you know, in Cleveland or in somewhere like Detroit, you know, where they're where they're allowed. Like if Anthony Edwards, say, gets drafted to a Detroit or to a New York, you know what I mean? Like he's gonna be allowed to shoot 20 shots a game. And while I think Minnesota is a better fit for him, I think that's the kind of the kind of role that wins Rookie of the Year. I don't think Rookie of the Year is always the most impactful rookie. I think sometimes it's just the guy who's allowed to you know, take the most shots and who's allowed to be more of a number one option. A bit like Andrew Wiggins, I guess, in his first season. I think he probably was the best rookie, Wiggins, but he didn't have much competition just because he was spoon-fed from day one.
Yeah, what he was asked to do. Yeah, and I would say ending up in Detroit, it's a tough thing because that roster is depleted. But I mean, my God, I went to the Pistons Hornets game earlier this year. One of the most unwatchable professional basketball games I've ever attended in my entire life. But that's beside the point.
So yeah, what's your last little bonus one? I'm keen to hear that.
Well, I have one. This is my last one. Then I have the bonus. It's all good. So this is, I think, the most realistic one, which is that the Timberwolves use every asset they have, whether it's the three draft picks and re-signing Malik Beasley to a relatively affordable contract. They're going to package that and they're going to get Devin Booker. And I will stand on this cliff for forever until it does not happen, until Devin Booker ends up elsewhere. He is going to be a Minnesota Timberwolf. I mean, there's no way he's not. Think about it. Be a human being for 10 seconds and think to yourself, oh, hey, take a step back. Oh, let's just say here, Jake Painting's been my best friend for 5 years. Okay, I'm going to be texting Jake Painting every day and being like, dude, we got to play together. But and it's a fun conversation with my friend. But then all of a sudden, when our other best friend ends up on that team, now all of a sudden, two of my best friends are playing together. I'm a human being. I got to get there. He is going to end up in Minnesota. Okay, it's unbelievable. It's unprecedented. When people demand trades, it's to New York, LA, blah, 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 blah. This is going to be the first time in NBA history that a player is going to request a trade to a smaller market team. And it's going to happen. Devin Booker is going to be a Minnesota Timberwolf. It's going to be D'Lo, Booker, Cat. It's going to happen. Three best friends. They've talked about it before when none of them were teammates. It's going to happen. And when people say, oh, the Timberwolves, they're not going to have the best offer. They're not going to have the best offer. Guess what? When the NBA knows that's where he wants to be and he's disgruntled, he ends up there. Look at Paul George. Look at Kawhi for years. Oh, they're going to end up in LA. They're going to end up in LA. Paul George went to OKC. He resigned. They ended up where they wanted to be. It happens. It's the way the world works. And it's typically not in Minnesota's favor, but for this example, it is. You don't think Gerson Rosas is going after Devin Booker? You're out of your mind. And people don't think we have assets. The Timberwolves have assets. Make no mistake. They have two first-round picks this year, a second-round pick that'll be very high. That's beside the point. Malik Beasley is going to be a player that has shown he can play at a high level and is going to cost about half the cost. You got a James Johnson contract. You got Jarrett Culver on a rookie deal. You can throw in a Naz Reid. The Timberwolves have all the assets necessary to make a competitive offer to a team that knows this is where he wants to be. Mm-hmm. I think that it's very, very, very realistic Devin Booker is a Minnesota Timberwolf.
Yeah, I think I have a harder time not getting on board with it. I think, like you said, I'm absolutely certain that Gerson Rosas knows about this friendship. I'm certain that he wants to capitalize on it. I'm certain that he would give up a ton of assets to get it done. I just think that there's the hurdles are first. I think Booker would need to make a very pointed trade request, you know, directly towards Minnesota, and then I think like you said, like even if he does end up in Minnesota, maybe it's a long way around in a Paul George type scenario, or even in a Jimmy Butler type scenario where it seemed like he wanted to get to Miami, you know, after leaving Minnesota, but I don't think you know, the parent team, the Phoenix in this scenario, always play the game like everyone else should be playing it. I think if he says he wants to go to Minnesota, if he's got 3 years left on his contract, there's a lot of teams that are going to be offering deals for him if they hear that he wants out. And it's because it's different to an Anthony Davis, say, last season where he had a year and a player option left on his contract. It's almost like, it's not like he's going to leave you after one season. If if Philadelphia had assets, you know, just to pull a random team out of the hat, but if they had assets to trade for Devin Booker, I think they'd certainly do it because you've got him on the contract for 3 years anyway. Even if he's disgruntled, he doesn't strike me as the type of guy to do a Jimmy Butler and kind of, you know, quit on his team. I think he would definitely still go out there and play. And then maybe he ends up in Minnesota a year after that or 2 years after that when he has that 1 year left on his contract and everyone knows that he's going to go to Minnesota. But I just think there's a lot of stumbling blocks. I think that, I think, like I said, I'd be very surprised if they don't, if they're not monitoring this situation extremely closely. And if he does, and I think they'd offer the house for him. I think it'd be, like you said, Culver, Okogie, fillers, a bundle of picks, anything that they could. And then, you know, this team would have the best offensive in the league. But I just think there's a lot of, you know, hurdles to jump over before you can get there.
And here's the thing, when you say hurdles, that typically makes me pause, but gives me confidence in Gerson Rosas. How many hurdles were there to get D'Angelo Russell?
Oh, a ton. Yep, that's for sure.
And he's here.
Yeah.
So I feel good about it. I mean, I really do. I think you don't think that these guys are in a group chat together talking about this?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean, my God. I mean, let's just be real. I mean, and let me ask you this. And this is kind of off the top of your head, and no problem if you can't think. But who off the top of your head can make a more competitive offer than Minnesota from an asset standpoint that would want Devin Booker?
It's tough. Like maybe a Miami, you know what I mean? Like they're always star hunting. Like maybe a Hero and a Robinson and a pick.
Maybe Adebayo.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like depending on how much they want him. Like you said, it's tough to come up with one off the top of my head. But
I think
every team would be definitely inquiring for his services if they had the chance.
Sure. And I love, Devin Booker, but I don't think he can be the main. I think he can be your second option. I don't think you can win a championship with him as your number one.
And I think that's almost the case for Towns as well. But when you can share that first option, and then you have Russell as a third option,
it's a 1A, 1B.
Exactly. I think they'd all share the court pretty well. Obviously, they're really good friends too, so I don't think they'd have a problem with sacrificing a few points per game to kind of, you know, for the betterment of the team. So I don't see it not working. If it happens, I don't see it not working well on offense.
Sure. And the thing is if he goes to Miami, who's the point guard?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Who's the two? I don't know. I just think it's very real. I feel great about it. I'll just say that.
Yeah, and obviously the defense would be a problem, but you know that all of that has been spoken about to the death. So we're not going to spend an hour talking about Devin Booker. Yeah. So percent? I think for me, the percentage wise, it's 100% for me that they try to do it. I mean, I've got no doubts that if they could sniff, you know, blood in the water, then they don't attack it like a shark. But getting it done, I'm definitely lower. I think. Maybe 25% for me.
Okay. Interesting. I'd say it's 100. Yeah. Again, it's 100% that they go after it. From a percentage standpoint, I feel very confident. I'm at a 75% chance. And the reason being is that from a human element, I think to myself, let me pick up the phone here. If I'm Gerson Rosas and, Let me get, you know, the GM of the Suns on the line and say, hey, listen, man, here's the deal. This is where he wants to be. What's it going to take?
Yeah.
As Rosas, you just have to be willing to meet the request, meet the offer, and make it happen. So I feel really very confident that it's a conversation. Hey, say, hey, this is where he wants to be. What's it going to take? Outside of Cat, outside of D'Lo, what's it going to take? Because a guy like Malik Beasley, when we re-sign him, is perfect to ship out there. A guy like, you know, a Naz Reid with high upside. Phoenix, when they send him out, they're rebuilding, and they need a core. And if you can give them a Culver, if you can give them a Naz Reid, if you can give them a Beasley and some picks or whatever it is and make the cap work, all of a sudden it's a much, you know, better conversation.
So what was your bonus one?
This little bonus one here is I tweeted it out about an hour ago, and my phone is going insane with people that are calling me an idiot and telling me I don't know anything about basketball. D'Angelo Russell is a top 25 player in the NBA. I believe that in my heart of hearts. And I'm going to already just answer the question 100% chance that I believe that. I think he is – what separates him from James Harden? And that's what I want to ask the viewers that are listening to this. Ask yourself that for 20 seconds.
It's the free throw, right, but
– yeah, I mean, it's like –
And yeah, that's close to 10 extra points a game from the free throw line. And I'm high on D'Angelo Russell, but I think the game style is definitely comparable to Harden, but the way Harden gets to the line and can, you know, play in isolation all game. I mean, D'Angelo Russell is still a great offensive isolation player, but the way Harden can get to the line is just such an efficient method of scoring. Like, we know that Minnesota like to play that Morey ball as well, you know, and being able to live at the line is the next step for Russell to even get into that conversation, I think.
No, and that's a great point, but I mean, he's 24 years old and he's been an all-star. He's one of those guys where you gotta realize some of these dudes coming out in the draft are like 2 years younger than him. He's already been an all-star. I mean, I don't understand. There's not a huge gap between him and Harden other than the free throws. I mean, my God. I mean, what is the deal that this dude is so crazy? If he never would have left L.A. with that Swaggy P incident, I mean, we're having a whole different conversation here. He carried Brooklyn to the playoffs. There are not 25 players I would rather take than him. Everyone, the big argument I'm getting on my Twitter feed right now is Drew Holiday. Give me D'Lo over Drew Holiday 100 times out of 100. D'Angelo Russell gets no love. It is mind-blowing to me. Yes, he does not play defense. I understand that. A lot of superstars don't do that either. He can score at will. When we didn't sign him at the deadline, I was at the Wolves game against Golden State this past year, and he dropped like 50, 60, I don't even know what it was. And I was sick to my stomach. I could not believe it. He just went off. He is someone that can score at will. There are not 25 people I would take ahead of D'Angelo Russell. 100% confidence behind that statement. He's 24 years old. Give me D'Lo all day to run my
team. I think the one thing that gets underrated with him in the mainstream kind of NBA circles is the value of being able to be a really high volume 3-point shooter, especially off the dribble, and then create for others as a pick and roll passer. My favorite thing about D'Angelo Russell is watching him manipulate pick and rolls, watching him get a defender on his back and put the guy in jail, and then either you know, hit the little step back mid range. I know, like we said, mid range isn't the way they want to play. But it really, for him, it really does open up a lot of things because they need to respect that first step of his. He doesn't get to the rim very well, but because he can shoot the mid-range, players still tend to be on their heels a little bit when he's beyond the 3-point line, and that lends itself to a lot of pull-up threes where he shoots a really high level for a guy who's shooting, you know, 6 or 7 a night, and then really good passer. I'm probably right on the borderline of 25. I think
definitely
top 35. Probably in that range for me, somewhere between 25 and 35. I mean, on his night, definitely one of them players who, if he gets hot, he's just unstoppable. And he goes through those little patches, even in a game. You know, he'll just have 5 minutes of just scorching hot shooting. There was even a few of those games, even with Minnesota in that small sample size, where he just he can put a team away pretty quickly. I think the game that they won against New Orleans late in the season.
Yep.
I think he only had, you know, like low 20s for the game, but I think at one stage he scored about 12 in about 3 minutes.
Yeah,
that was he really can put the boot into someone's neck if he's feeling himself. So I'm not fully against that. I'm not right there with you, but I think it's outlandish.
Sure. No, I mean, I'll be honest. I feel great hearing you say that because I thought you were going to think I was crazy because based off the reaction I'm getting is that people are freaking out at me. But I mean, realistically, like you said, I mean, the man can score at will. I mean, when he gets hot, I mean, there's a handful of people. there aren't many people who can get hot and that you would want. There aren't many people that get hot and you think, oh my God, this dude's unstoppable. Like he is. He truly, yeah. When he's hot, I mean, he is someone you don't want to be going against.
Yeah, and I think the thing that makes me, I guess, drink the Kool-Aid a little bit more, you know, than some of your Twitter followers, and you know me, I'm not overly optimistic. I'm optimistic. I think in general, I think I'm pretty optimistic compared to a lot of other people, but I'm not overly optimistic. I try and, you know, stay as impartial as possible. But I think the one thing that often gets overlooked as well with Russell is that he's made major improvements from his start of his season. Every year he's gotten a lot better. Even this season, it was very, filled with a bit of turmoil and stuff. Just because, you know, the trade and Golden State never even really wanted him to begin with. But he was still better this season than he was with Brooklyn, just in terms of raw production. I think, obviously, it felt better with Brooklyn just because he was doing that on a team that was surging for the playoffs and he was leading that charge. But every year he's gotten a lot better. He the flaws in his game, you know, get a little bit better every season. I think he'll definitely get to the rim a little bit more next season, get to the free throw line a little bit more. And like you said, he's 24 years old. So I think, you know, if we're going to give guys like Karl-Anthony Towns the benefit of the doubt for his defense, I think you've got to do the same with Russell. I think I think his problem, unlike Towns, is more engagement. I think he's I think skill-wise, he's a better defender than Towns, but I think he just he just disengages himself at times, especially when when the game's over or when, you know, it feels like Minnesota don't have a chance to win. I think if you see Minnesota, competing next season like Brooklyn did, I think you'll see him as a better defender like I think he was that year with Brooklyn.
Yeah, no, and I agree. I think, ultimately, at the end of the day, you have to have a team around you. And he's proven that when he has somewhat of a semblance of a team around him, he can win. And he showed that in Brooklyn. So I feel great about it. I really think he's top 25. I can't believe that you said top 35. I appreciate that. need a little backup here on Twitter. But, I completely agree.
Yeah, well, I think that's a good way to end the optimistic podcast. Yep. We definitely threw out some hot takes. I'm sure we'll pop a little bit of flack on Twitter for that, but it's all fun and games. You know what I mean? It's really good to be optimistic in this climate of the world. I think, and especially with Timberwolves basketball being ever depressing, I think it's good to have a little bit of fun with this, and then maybe halfway through the season or whatever, we'll get back and revisit a few of these.
For sure. I completely agree.
Yeah, so thanks again for coming on. You can find Trip over at Timberwolves News on Twitter, at not the Wolfson. If you don't follow him, which I'm sure if you listen to this, you probably do follow him, but if you don't follow him, get over there and do that, and you can find all his written work over at Dunking with Wolves now. I'm really excited to see where you can take your writing, and I'll definitely be following on with all of that. So thanks again for coming on, man.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Honestly, huge fan of your work. Always, love what you do at Canis Hoopus, both on the podcast and writing side. So truly, great to be here. If you're listening for the first time, keep listening. This is an incredible podcast. Jake has great insight, makes you feel right at home. So thanks again, man.
Thanks, man. All right. I'll see everyone else. Rate, like, subscribe, share, all that good stuff. And I'll see you guys next week. Thank you.